begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh, yeah, I'm back.
Oh, yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, Big Mouth Dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, tormented father of three.
And we better keep this quick because I've just paused Homeland. And it's the season finale and possibly the
Oh, do you want a spoiler?
The final finale.
Oh, no, it's not. I think there is a fourth season coming.
That they might regret that because at the moment it's still good.
Oh boy, though. It's so exciting.
There are so many spoilers around, though, for all sorts of things lately.
Spoiler, Kerry's still a bit crazy. Anywho.
I'm over the craziness.
We've got a guest on Discourse. It is Professor Thomas Lumley from the Auckland University Department of Statistics and the Stats Chat blog. I have to say that slowly because it's quite hard to say.
Should I call you Professor or should I call you Doctor?
Thomas will do.
Or are you, like, does your, Dylan? I noticed that there are...
toddlers come in the room. this is the tormented father of three thing I was talking about.
Why don't you pick the kid up and give him a big hug and just hold him for the rest of the show and then it will be fine.
I'll do that. It works out fine. Let's see how that goes.
So Professor Thomas, that's actually only a German thing really, isn't it, going all with all the additional titles. How many doctorates have you got? Is it only one or can we...
Only the one, yes.
You're not also a baron or something?
Nah.
I considered buying a barony. But I decided
they still let you do that, do they?
Well, then they're even less official than any. I mean, in England, of course, you could buy like peerages, as it turns out, for even up to, you know, in the last 10 years, I think people were still able to buy dodgy little peerages in the form of giving a donation to the political party in power, I think at the time, which was probably Labour. And then they were, you know, strangely enough, they were knighted. Wow, what an amazing coincidence. £500,000 and you become a sir. This was not that kind of barony, though. This was like a sea land or some one of those.
Yes.
Oh, no. Everyone could be. I bet you can even buy those with bitcoins.
Oh, that might be true. I think sea land is pretty much defunct now, though, right? I mean, it's really, there's just no one there. It's not really.
The guy who, the head of it, the mastermind, I suppose you'd call him, I think he died. And his son is running it but isn't living there anymore. And there's, I don't know, it's all gone pear-shaped.
What are the statistics, Doctor, on how long is it possible for the average 5-year-old to shut the fuck up for?
That was a 2-year-old.
Oh, well, that's a very different question, isn't it?
It's a totally different.
I'm not sure that science can measure units of time that small.
It'll be angstroms or something. Wait, no, is that a unit of length? What's
Isn't
an angstrom?
Jiffy's a unit of time, I think. Yep. I'm pretty sure Jiffy is a unit of...
Yeah, that's one of the nuclear physics ones.
Yeah. So I have three children aged 8, 5, and 2, and if they all are in the same place at the same time, there is simply no chance of quiet.
Yeah.
It's just not possible.
It's got to be said that in terms of planning ahead, you're not very good at it.
No. And I should think that perhaps starting a podcast while a toddler is failing to go to bed is... Who wants Thomas?
I'm actually really confident about this episode.
I think it's going great.
I think it's
going
to be fantastic. And let me tell you two of the reasons why. Basically, I'm playing Edward 40 Hands by myself. But, I mean, they're not taped on, but I have 2 litre and a bit bottles of old moot cider. And I'm well on my way into the first one. I'm not doing my old tradition. Can you tell her that is not a toddler that I'm hearing right now? She definitely knows better than to be talking behind the guy with the microphone. You should send her away. Send her to make you a fucking sandwich and even say it like that.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to do, Morgan. That is precise. You can get my wife.
It would work very well.
Anyway, I'm updating the toddler status. He's gone to watch Thomas in the Lounge, so we'll see how this goes from here on.
Well, that'll be for next 37 seconds approximately, because obviously you are the adventurer's destination in your little office.
I am.
There.
The office is exciting because it's where all the board games are kept.
Well, don't put them in there. Just shove them out the door and then put a desk behind the door.
I'll push the shelf over.
Do that.
They'll fall out. It's done. It's happened. It's finished. So anyway, statistics I thought was a good thing to talk about because there's two really statistical things lately that we've been wanting to talk about, and haven't because we don't know enough.
Yeah.
Well, I don't.
Like, statistically, how many times should Len Brown have resigned already?
Yes, well,
I think
once would probably do it.
But, the unit of measure for that is Rob Fords.
Oh, yeah. But that's a zero, isn't it?
No, three Rob Fords.
Three Rob Fords, but that's a non-resignation. That's like against all special. Possible logic or common sense.
I was thinking more about the census and also the citizens-initiated referendum, both of which generated numbers that we can't understand properly, apparently.
So the final referendum turnout was 45.1%. 1,332,000 and some
people. Is that of enrolled voters or of the potential electorate?
That just says of New Zealanders.
It's of enrolled voters, I believe.
Yeah, so there is some difference between that and the potential electorate because some people aren't enrolled at this stage. Is that?
Yep.
Actually, we can work it out because if it's 1.3 million votes and that is 45.1% of what they call New Zealanders, then that clearly doesn't add up to 4 million people.
But clearly, only people over 18 and who are New Zealand citizens, or is it residents?
No, it's residents. Residents
who are New Zealand residents and who are not currently in prison. And probably one or two other things. I don't think the difference.
It's just the enrolled. It's just the enrolled voters.
So is that a good turnout?
No.
I mean, it depends on who you are.
I think it's lower than citizen-initiated referenda have gotten in the past.
Yeah. So it's lower than even. I mean, obviously the postal ones don't get the turnout that the ones that are run at the same time as the general election do.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the big difference. I mean, the MMP one, everybody was going to the ballot box anyway.
Mm.
But of the citizens-initiated ones, I mean, the headline crowing and the Twitter crowing was all about, you know, two-thirds of the country don't want asset sales.
Yep.
But
well,
that's not really a reasonable thing to draw from that, is it?
No, I mean, the problem is it's very hard to tell what the real number is. I mean, I think it's probably more than 50%, but even that, it's hard to be really sure because we don't know how those 1.3 million people were different from the whatever proportion it is, however many million it was who didn't vote. You know, there was 1.6 million or something who didn't vote.
Yeah.
And we don't know how different they are. I mean, my guess is that there's the people who didn't vote, there's a bunch who don't care.
Yeah.
And that there's probably also, since the people on the No campaign were saying that this was very important and the government was saying it was just a publicity stunt, you might think that people who were against asset sales were more likely to vote than people who were for asset sales, but you can't really tell.
Well, I always assume that anyone, you know, that the position against the status quo has an advantage in something like this because, you know, for me, if I supported asset sales, and I don't particularly, I did actually vote no, but if I did support asset sales, I can just do nothing because I know it's going to happen anyway.
Yes, exactly. And particularly in a situation where the government had reasonably clearly committed to ignoring the result.
Yeah. And already sold most of the things that they could anyway.
Yes.
So, Professor Thomas, let's say that you had a goon squad and they're given to you for a very specific reason, and that is to enforce your randomly selected sample of the population.
Yep.
So you've got all these guys with billy clubs and maybe some of them are women, and I'm sure some of them are also lesbians, and you can send them around and grab, you know, your selected group. How few people, and could you do it for less than the cost of this postal ballot, how few people would you need to get probably a statistically more accurate reading of the temperature of the nation on this? Because this was 1.3 million people, but they were all self-selected. Like, only the people who wanted to vote, voted. And so that calls into question the result right from there. But I suspect that probably with only a couple of thousand people being frog marched, between a couple of burly lads with big helmets on into a little van where they had to answer a series of questions. I suspect you'd only need a few thousand people to get a more accurate number.
Yes, and so, I mean, the standard size of opinion polls in New Zealand is about 1,000 people. In fact, around the world, the standard size of opinion polls is about 1,000 people, because that gives you a margin of about 3% if you've got random sampling.
Yeah.
And so if all you wanted to know was whether a majority of people were in favour of asset sales or not, then the thing to do would be to do a well-conducted random sample.
Yeah.
Even if you can't force people to vote, I mean, opinion pollers are fairly good at making you feel guilty about not answering. And it's only going to take, it's not going to be like one of these questionnaires that goes on for half an hour.
Yeah. But so I'm telling you that
you can force them. The billy clubs.
So how many people would you need to get to like 0.1% margin of error? Or is that not really?
So you want to get the margin of error down by another factor of 30. So you need 30 squared times as many people. So you need 900 times as many people. So you'd need nearly 1 million people.
All right. So actually, so it's actually not all that inefficient to do it with the postal ballot then. Maybe. Well, except that it's not random. God, well, how do you get?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting, I think that we're probably getting a margin of error in the sense that the margin of error, I'd say, would probably be around 20% in the sense that I wouldn't be prepared to bet a lot of money on the result being closer than 20% to the truth.
Yeah.
So I had this theory because of these reasons, I think the citizens initiated referendum is essentially always pointless and always just a political point scoring campaign for someone. So
if it's not binding, yes. I mean, binding
is even worse. I can't imagine that this situation being a binding referendum. That seems like
But at least they're not pointless. They do achieve something,
I suppose.
My theory is
we get 100,000 signatures, and then the government engages Statistics New Zealand to sample a number of people, 1,000, 2,000, whatever it needs to be, and deliver what I would call a formal recommendation to government based on that.
Yeah,
and then the government has to respond to it formally, so they can choose to ignore it if they want to, but they have to justify that.
Yeah, I mean, that would actually be I don't think that you've got any chance of getting something like that to happen because people don't really believe in sampling. But I think, that would be a much better way of running it. I mean, on the other hand, there is the thing about publicity stunt. I mean, the point, there is some benefit to if the government's prepared to ignore public opinion on an issue, there is something to be said for making them pay a political price to do that. But that's about the best justification I can think of for a non-binding referenda. And that would apply too with a sampling-based one.
Mm. I'm very pleased that they're non-binding. And the reason I'm pleased they're non-binding is, and I will say how I'm pleased in that regard by asking a question, which I was asked about 14 years ago. Should there be a reform of our justice system placing greater emphasis on the needs of victims, providing restitution and compensation for them, and imposing minimum sentences and hard labour for all serious violent offences? That is why there should be no binding referenda in New Zealand.
I wanted to punish them for being so stupid.
91%, over 91%, 91% of people said yes to that, to all of those various different things. That is not a single question, that compound. No.
In Washington State, where I was in the US, they've got binding referenda, and they're a bit more careful about making them well specified, but they still pass some fairly dumb ideas.
Yeah.
Some fairly sensible ones.
They decriminalized marijuana in Washington.
They decriminalized marijuana and legalized same-sex marriage. So they do have some good ones. It's just that they also have a bunch of dumb ones.
So we didn't need to have a referendum on legalizing same-sex marriage. I wish there was a better word. Like, there are these things like giving women the vote. It's like, it's not really giving it to them. It's preventing them.
There are better. So universal marriage equality. Suffrage.
Yeah.
Marriage equality and universal suffrage.
Yeah. And enfranchisement rather than maybe giving. Stopping. Take your foot off their head. You know, it's not like you're giving them a gift. You're just stopping punishing them for being born a certain way. It's, you know, the language.
I would vote in favor of the taking your foot off the woman's head bill.
Actually, speaking of that, but not that, but something that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. So last week, obviously, we had the paywall episode. That was a really interesting experiment. We've made a lot of money out of it, but we possibly also won't continue the experiment. And I'm not going to go into the specific reasons why. But obviously, I mean, we made a really special episode, but only paying customers can hear about it. And there will be an additional episode this week in the in the pay part of the site that you can only
Stephen get. Fry was incredible.
Oh my God! Seriously, yeah. Ricky Gervais not on his top form.
No, I think he was possibly on drugs. Didn't he say that?
Yeah, and that laugh, I find it so grating. But so previous to that, in 4.37, we discussed whether I would help you hide the corpse of a body of a person that you'd just murdered. And I said that I thought that there were probably circumstances under which I would do that. But it's a very small number. And actually, it's occurred to me the circumstances under which I would be prepared to do that. And that would be if you caught someone messing with your family in very particular ways that I won't go into detail with because it might be upsetting for you. I would absolutely help you then. I would clean up the room, the likes of which it's never been cleaned before. There wouldn't be a blood spot anywhere. I'd help you disjoint the bodies and then we could go and, you know, distribute the whatever we blended up and maybe into the ocean. I would help you under those circumstances. Probably, even if you
grab a steak afterwards.
Even if you found like the country's worst ever serial killer, I probably would turn you in if you killed that person, unless they had done something to your family.
Okay,
so that's pretty much the circumstances.
I'm taking that under advisement. Thank you very much.
That's not really related to universal suffrage, is it?
No.
But some honestly,
suffering.
Or marriage equality.
But really, I haven't done show notes this week. So, you know, when it occurs to me, I pretty much have to say it, or it will disappear into the ether.
Okay, then. So, we've another referendum. The other big statistical thing, and it's the huge statistical thing, is census.
Yes,
I really liked The Village of 100 People.
Yes,
that was great.
Yeah, it's a good way of describing. It's a lot better than proportions and so on for describing things. That sort of. You know, you've got 100 people or 1,000 people.
Yeah. So, and I tell you what, that one woman who earns more than $100,000, I bet she's batting the guys off.
Yep.
She's beating them off. Not with a stick.
I said batting them deliberately.
Oh, right, okay. So Village of 100 People, is that the maximum sustainable population that we can actually support in New Zealand? Is that
and
what
how
that
many
means?
Sheep?
Well, at least 100. Wait, how many men are there? Well, I guess at least 50. Because you don't want anyone to be, like, jealous. Hello?
Was it we had 3 million people and 30 million sheep or something? Was that I don't think it's true.
I think it was more
million
than that.
Sheep it was, yeah. I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've eaten a lot of them.
Yeah.
And the English and mostly the English, actually, I think, have eaten most of the rest of them.
You reckon?
I think so. I don't think we eat nearly as many of our sheep as other people.
That's probably true, but it's not America, so why are we so obsessed with signing away our sovereignty for TPP?
I'm not there yet. I still want to deal with the census.
All right. Census it is. So the thing I'm most interested in is the change now. I mean, I don't know if you can say, I guess, how significant it is. The change from being a Christian, a self-professedly Christian-dominated society, to now Christians being, you know, in some ways of looking at it, a minority. But that's only if, like, the other group is absolutely everyone, Hindu and atheist and Muslim and Buddhist, all combined into one happy family, which obviously that group is not a happy family. So I'm not really sure if it's significant, but I'm very interested by the rate of change amongst some of the religious groups.
Yes, I mean, there's been a big fall in the number of people saying that they're religious.
Yeah.
It's a bit hard to tell how much of it is a change in how many people are actually religious and how much of it is a change in whether they say they are.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be significant though? I mean, would people who had previously said they were religious not say they would now? I would.
Yes, I think it would have to be that, because I think that immigrants are more likely to be. So you've got three changes. People getting old enough to answer the question for the first time, people dying, and then immigration and emigration. I think immigrants are more likely to be religious than people born here.
Yeah.
And the people dying, you know, the young people are less likely to be religious than older people. So I think it probably is a change that we're getting, that most of the decrease is actually people who said 6 years ago they said they were religious. This time the same people said they didn't, probably.
And so you think some of those would be people who were children before and now are adults?
Yes. So some of it will be answer, that. So. Yeah. But not that many. I think some of it will have to also be people who actually changed their answer.
Yeah.
So is it just my perception? Oh, cool. We've got we're four up now. We've got the we're going to tap into the lucrative 3-year-old market. Wait, or is it a 5-year-old? Wait, how?
This one's two, and he's got blocks.
Right, those blocks. I wish they were made out of felt, because that would be quiet. Can you just like strike him in the face? Like just a, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, repeatedly punching him. Just an open handed back of the hand. Just across the.
Like I'll get back to you on that.
Was that sound? No, was that immediately after you? Did you actually? Did you put it into practice? I didn't expect you to put it into practice so quickly. So is it just my perception? So something you said about immigrants being maybe more likely to be religious. So my perception is that Asian immigrants are quite strongly religious generally.
Yes. Well, I think there's certainly. Some of them are, and also Pacific Islander immigrants, I think, are more likely to be religious.
Do we still get them?
I think we do. I mean, not as... I think there's still net immigration. I mean, it's not a... I don't think it's a terribly large fraction of the Pacific community here.
Yeah.
But I think there's still net migration from the Pacific Islands.
Man, I mean, if I lived in... let's say Vanuatu, and I was told, oh, you can move to New Zealand and you'll have to start paying income tax. And by the way, you won't be in Vanuatu anymore. I'd be like, you know, I'm going to stay here. Now, that probably isn't taking into account, maybe they have poor employment there, I don't know. But, I mean, they have no standing army. That seems pretty idyllic to me. You know, you'd walk off a beach and suddenly you're on a reef. And it's, you know, there are beautiful fish and it's amazing. And also they have coconut crab. And they have kava, the likes of which you will find nowhere else in the world. You don't want to smell it. You don't really want to taste it, but it gets the job done. So, I mean, I'm just saying, if you're Ni Vanuatu and you're thinking, you may stand up long time under God, you're saying something like that, probably. And I'm saying, yes, but just think about how good you've got it where you are, mate.
Yeah, though I think some of it is people wanting to send... you know, to get money for families.
Yeah.
I mean, that you've got a lot of stuff, but what you don't have is cash. And so...
yeah.
And there are different provisions in the immigration law for people from some of the Pacific Island countries.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how big it is at the moment. Oh, yes, here we are. We've got... I mean, I must admit this is according to Kiwi Blog, so
I trust him.
He's reasonably good on numbers. There's, for example, a quota from Samoa of 1,100 a year.
Wow, that's such a small number.
It is, yes. But yes, and then different quotas for other. And I think that's in addition to the whatever else there is, you know, sort of anybody immigration.
The only problem with Samoan migrants is that they don't set up restaurants, because island food...
There is a couple.
Island food is amazing. I wish it was easier to get it. I can only get it when there are special events near my office. Like, there are these crazy things with corned beef, and they, like, add mayonnaise and, like, other things with, like, coconut stuff and fish. And it's like, this is incredible, but you just can't normally get it, I guess, you know, unless you make it at home or whatever.
What? Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it, but that was one of the few countries where you couldn't get food from in Melbourne when I was growing up.
Yeah. I am a bit of a corned beef addict, actually, it has to be
there
said.
There is definitely a Samoan restaurant somewhere, because I remember when I was working on Tangata Pacifica, we edited a story about it, and I just made me very hungry.
Right. I mean, it's not. I'm not saying that I've gone out of my way to try and find one. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Like, you know, it's very easy for me to find, you know, Turkish food or Indian food. I don't know when I last saw a Samoan restaurant, though. And which seems like, yep. It seems like saying that, you know, that's a problem. That's an opportunity for someone. We are a Pacific nation. We're a Pacific city. We should have more Pacific food. And I tell you what, coconut crab is so good. It is unbelievable. It is delicious, and it is also huge. And unfortunately, from time to time, it's also endangered. And, you know, it's not so good. But, oh my God, it's delicious. Prepared with a little bit of garlic and butter. Ooh! Oh, one of my best ever meals that I've ever had was coconut crab. And it is so, oh my God. People who've had coconut crab, they'll be listening to the show right now and they'll be going, yep, that's correct.
I've been terrified by them. I've never eaten one.
Have you? Where were you terrified?
When I was on a small uninhabited island in Fiji.
That's
camping.
Right. You made that funny show, the one with what's her name, who got toxic shock or something.
That's exactly right.
That we're not really allowed to talk about.
Probably not. I don't know.
Yeah. So actually, speaking of, you know, what's her name, but a different person, have you been paying attention today to, this is what happens when I don't have notes, by the way, Dylan. Off good. The fucking rails. Actually, I've got a button just appropriate for this. Why do we even do this? Exactly. Why do we even do this? So Seven Sharp has imploded. Oh, it's so funny. It's so sweet. Wait, have you finished talking about the census?
Yeah, I guess so. We'll come back to it. I've got another statistics-y thing afterwards. But yeah, that's fine. We'll just keep going.
So, Alison Mauer resigned today.
Oh, we could talk about ratings for Seven Sharp. You see, that would bring it back to statistics.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Alison Mauer resigned today. And this is, like, today also, there was a review in the Herald of Seven Sharp that was just like, I was tied to my chair and then I was forced to watch it. And oh my God, it's terrible. And it's definitely not coming back next year. And this afternoon, Alison Mauer resigns. Greg Boyd left several months ago, and he was the only serious journalist amongst them. They're being replaced by, what's his name?
Mike Hosking.
Mike Hosking, who is, you know, he's a bit of a dickhead, but he probably is going to be more serious. And I mean, we've spoken about this ever since they first announced this ridiculous show. The problem with Close Up wasn't that it was too hard. Right? TVNZ was like, let's soften 7 o'clock. What's leading into this is the news. So obviously, what people want right here is a laugh. Let's treat it as if it's 11:30 at night and put on some fucking stupid jokey panel show. How about that? That's exactly what people want. Well, it turns out that all of the critics, of which there were many critics. There were very few people saying this was a great idea. As far as I know, there were zero people saying this was a good idea, except maybe at TVNZ. And they were like, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to this piece of shit show. Well, guess what, you idiots? Softening up 7 o'clock is not what people wanted.
I can't remember. Throng was quite obsessed. So Throng's a website that, you know, follows TV stuff.
Yeah.
And they were, dare I say it, quite obsessed with Seven Sharp when it first came out and went all over the place drawing graphs of all sorts about the ratings. But suffice to say, it lost a lot of the ratings that Close Up had. It still managed to mostly beat Campbell Live, which is, you know, certain things you could think about that. But it definitely didn't. I don't think it ever really regained what it had lost.
Yeah. Now, but the thing is that Campbell Live, I think, had previously beaten this, whatever show was on at 7, on one. They'd previously beaten it like one time ever. And they've since gone on to beat it several times, right? So it's not looking good. You know, it wasn't looking good. Now, the unfortunate thing, though, is that I think that Jesse Mulligan, who is probably the most underrated on the panel, is actually the biggest brain on the show. But I don't know if it's something that he's chosen to do, hold himself back, or if he's actually been muzzled. But he is a funny motherfucker. And comedy, satire, can be extremely insightful, and it can actually illuminate stories really well. But it feels like he's...
Yeah, see if the Daily Show...
Exactly. Or even, you know, political cartoons going back centuries, right? Things that on the surface look like they're funny can actually tell a big story really quickly. They can really cut to the bone really quickly, right? And I feel like he hasn't... Now, I mean, I'm not going to say that I watch it regularly because it's not a good show, right? So I'm not going to watch it regularly. But I felt like when I did watch it, it didn't feel like he was being given his legs, you know? And the thing... But the problem is... So I wanted it to be a hard show, right? Or I wanted 7 o'clock to have a hard show in that slot. I just don't know that Mike Hosking is going to be the guy because he is a dickhead, and he doesn't have clean hands either. I mean, he was the guy that was he was busted taking a whole lot of Sky City money and so on, right? So he's not exactly a tidy dude.
It'll be interesting. So he used to host Close Up quite regularly.
Yeah.
Because what's his name? Mustachioed One. Sainsbury.
Yeah.
He used to not be there on Fridays. So Mike Hosking always hosted the Friday episodes of Close Up, and I don't think he ever really grasped that one completely.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting because I know that Seven Sharp was based on some overseas shows. I think one of them is called the 7 PM Project in Australia and. And a couple of others as well, which kind of do successfully mix current affairs and comedy, but they've just never quite found the right mix. I think they've been trying to be too current affairs-y still or something.
Yeah.
Also, they had a Broadcasting Standards Authority ruling against them, which also came out today, I think.
Yeah, that's right, about Colin Craig.
About, amazingly enough, Colin Craig. So Colin Craig threatened to sue The Civilian when they made a satire article about him. And then...
Good luck.
Seven Sharp lampooned him for taking them so seriously. And he managed to complain to the BSA that they should have given him a chance to respond.
So, Dylan, I want you to immediately hang up and disconnect your USB. Oh, no, it's going to disconnect Thomas as well, isn't it? All I want you to do then is disconnect your USB microphone and plug it back in while I'm talking. And I'm going to ask Thomas, statistically, what is the best show to have on at 7 o'clock at night? And I'm going to do that in just a second once I hear that you've disconnected your device. So, Thomas, statistically, what is the best show to have on at 7 o'clock? And before you answer, though, let's see if Dylan's back. He's not back. So, statistically, the question, Thomas, what is the best show to have on at 7 o'clock at night? Can I go out on a limb here and say it's one that doesn't suck?
I think that.
But before you answer,
advantage.
Before you answer, Professor, I understand that the part of your job is like publishing and like increasing your media profile. So actually, it's just occurred to me that you probably can't. You probably shouldn't answer the question as I've put it, and you should instead say Seven Sharp was perfectly good, and the show that will replace it will also be excellent, and I really look forward to appearing on it. Thomas, so statistically, which of those things is most accurate?
There are some lengths to which even academics won't go in order to appear on television.
See, but you can't say that Discourse didn't have your career in mind just then. It's not like that, we'll throw you a hospital pass or anything like that.
It was very considerate of you, yes.
Thank you, I appreciate it. I don't suppose have you heard of this thing on Twitter called Secret Santa, the New Zealand Post one? Have you participated?
No, I missed out on when it started. But I've seen a lot of discussion of people worrying about what they were going to give and whether it had got there and so on.
It turns out New Zealand Post isn't entirely sure how long it takes them to receive packages.
Yeah. So I sent my package last Wednesday via New Zealand Post Courier Post Service using their recommended little thing which generates an address thing and is supposed to be a tracked package. And that was sent from Central Auckland to, I don't even know, somewhere South Auckland, probably, right? It hasn't made it yet.
Oh, you're still not showing up.
It's been almost a week, and it's still marked down as not yet received. Now, technically, I have a feeling that that they will actually not punish me, because I think that they believe me. Because I did tweet a photo of my package as I sent it, and I have been talking all week, and I did give them my tracking code. But my tracking code has never been updated. My tracking code is as if it doesn't even exist.
Yeah, I think they've probably learned a lot of interesting things about their systems from this.
Yeah.
Which
maybe
is good.
That was the point.
Yeah,
well, I think probably it was. And I think, because the way it works is, when we've done Twitter Secret Santa in the past, you've had to trust your physical mailing address to some completely random dude on the internet. You don't know who it's been given to, which is fine. I mean, no one's really that paranoid about it, but you never know.
Yeah.
So now we send our packages to the Twitter person's, you know, username. You don't even need to know their real name if they haven't actually shared it online. So,
yeah.
You know, a few people are kind of anonymous. So the, you know, mine's at Dylan Reeve, and then it's at whatever the postal center private bag address is.
Care of Santa Storehouse, 9 Lawrence Stevens Drive, Auckland, 2022.
Yeah, exactly. So you send it there, and then they receive it, and they repackage it or redirect it to your recipient, which is fantastic, or to the recipient, which is fantastic.
And that also...
I really want them to extend this service.
Oh, yeah, it'd be great, wouldn't it? I mean, instead of having a PO box, you could just have, you know, an alias that you could name, and it would go to some clearinghouse somewhere, and then they'd redirect it to whatever address you decided to use that week. It'd be brilliant.
And also, how great would it be if like, for all your Trade Me stuff, instead of having to pay whatever the random person's postage was, they just package it, you know, you pay however much it costs them to just package it up in some brown paper or something, and they post it to your free post address, like you shop, and it just turns up at your house or wherever you've asked it to be delivered to.
I'd probably pay $100 a year for something like that.
There you go. So NZ Post, we should probably get Rob from NZ Post on.
Now, so here's the problem with my package not having been received at the New Zealand Post Centre. In theory, that means that the Secret Santa package that has been sent to me won't be dispatched. I think in practice that they will actually send it. My hunch is that they will actually send it. In theory, they are going to give that to, like, the Wellington City Mission or someone?
That's correct. So the clearinghouse idea is addressing a problem that has plagued secret centres of this nature all over the world, which is the non-reciprocal nature of it. It sucks to send a present away and then not receive one because the person who was supposed to send you one either was just stiffing the system or just didn't.
Lazy. Cheap,
or in the case of mine last year, I sent mine with a courier, and then I got back to work, you know, in the new year, and got a message from reception. Oh, the courier's left a thing here for you. They returned it like after the new year, saying, "Oh, we couldn't find the address."
What?
I know. I did eventually get it to the right recipient, but I was like, "Oh God,
man."
The problem, though, with the clearinghouse is that it doubles the number of people who don't get a present. So, you know, if you just send them off. And maybe 10% of people don't do anything. Then 10% of people don't get a present. But now those 10% plus the other.
Oh wow!
Well, they've actually thought about this ahead. So they've got some corporate partners to provide small presents. So the people who were meant to be sent something, they will actually get those little gifts. And I think mostly people are going to get like. Some coffee companies, a little bags of coffee from some company, some New Zealand coffee company. I can't remember the name of it. And possibly there are some other little things as well. So they've actually planned ahead for that. And it's very clever. So those people who were going to get stiffed, they do receive something. It's kind of, you know, it's symbolic. The stiffers are the ones that get nothing.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I'm not a stiffer.
that is the cry for the ages.
Yeah, it is. So in a second... Dr. Thomas, I'm going to ask you about statistical fallacies or mistakes people make of a statistical nature. But instead of putting you on the spot and expecting you to answer immediately, although probably you're entirely capable of that, you are a professor after all, I'm going to just speak for just a little bit longer and let you gather your thoughts for a second. And I'm going to open up the toot bag. Let's open up the toot bag.
Let's open up the toot bag.
Dylan?
Okay. Consider
let's
it
open
opened.
Up the toot bag.
Let's open up the toot bag. I kind of expected you to say let's open up the toot bag. It's not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's open up the toot bag.
We've actually never done it before like that. though. So I'm not surprised that you didn't, you know, it wasn't like a call response thing. You know, we didn't keep it easy. So last week, we got a comment on the paywall. I'm not sure how this guy got through because he's not amongst our subscribers. So Pete said, leaving aside the fact that I would consider paying to hear your podcast, Morgan, that's a bit presumptuous to call it my podcast. But you're correct. I don't believe that you have a paywall any more than your teacher did when you told her that the dog ate your homework. Now, it doesn't matter if you believe or not. Facts are facts. And, I mean, our subscriber base, our paying subscriber base, we hold their names in confidence. As far as you're concerned, they're anonymous and they are legion, and expect them. Now, Professor Thomas, I believe people make a lot of statistical mistakes. I believe I'm one of those people. I believe that I am prejudiced beyond all belief, and I struggle with it constantly. What are the most common statistically, what ways are people most likely to cock up statistical things? Is it journalists mainly? Do they get this stuff really badly wrong quite a lot?
Fairly often, yes. I mean, though often it's not so much that they make up the mistakes as that they repeat the mistakes that people give to them in press releases.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest one in journalism is just not having context for things. So you can see a lot of stories that say that something, whether it's teenage drink driving or burglaries or whatever, the greatest number of cases happen in Auckland, and it's about three times as many cases in Auckland as in Wellington.
Yeah.
And that's because the greatest number of people are in Auckland, and there's about three times as many people in Auckland as in Wellington. So that sort of thing you see a lot of.
I'm going to stop you right there because I believe that Wellington is much smaller than you give it credit for. And I mean emotionally as well as numerically. I think it's a tiny little town, and it deserves to be even smaller than it is. I can't back that up with an argument, but I just it's just a feeling that I have, you know? It's just,
It certainly feels like a very small little town when you're in the CBD.
And it's closed! That place shuts down! Like,
yeah, I can't even believe... Between Christmas and New Year's, I'm wondering.
Yeah. Why did you go there during Christmas and New Year's?
What's that?
Why did you go there? Why didn't you go somewhere cool like Vanuatu?
Because I had free domestic flights.
Have you heard much about Vanuatu, Dylan? Have you heard of coconut crab? Have you been to Vanuatu? You should go to Vanuatu and have coconut crab. You should also have kava, but it will give you the squirts.
Thank you for sharing.
See, now that is something that no one warns you about. Kava will clean you out. It will clean you out like
Professor Thomas, understanding statistics, I've just moving past the kava discussion. Understanding statistics, would you ever buy a lotto ticket?
I don't, and I wouldn't, but as long as you aren't buying them because you expect to make money out of it, I don't think there's anything wrong with people buying them. I mean, people buy them because they like the excitement of, waiting for the numbers to come up and thinking what they do with the money if they win, and it's relatively cheap entertainment if you like that. But as long as you don't think you're going to act, as long as you don't think it's an investment, I don't see any problem with people doing it. I personally don't actually get any particular fun out of it, though, so I
should
do it.
I should reconsider my retirement plan?
Potentially, yes.
But see, Dylan, you've got to be in to win.
Well, that's the thing. My feeling with a lot of, there's occasionally when the money just gets so ridiculously high. Hello again, Cassidy. Occasionally when the money just gets so ridiculously high, you think, someone's going to win this prize, and if I don't have a ticket, it certainly can't be me.
Yep.
Oh, Daddy. No, he's come for refuge because he's about to be put in bed.
So Dylan, have you considered that Cassidy definitely sounds like an American girl's name?
yeah, Cassidy, some people think Cassidy is a girl's name. They're wrong.
I think that just like Dylan, they are correct.
Dylan is definitely not a girl's name.
Dylan is so a girl's name.
That one movie...
Suck it forever. So I've been told that we should probably get this show back on track.
I don't know. We've run out of track. What else is statistically relevant to our lives that we don't consider?
45 minutes.
There you go. That's my question. Okay. What statistic is the least? What do you think statistically is what we think of the least that is most important to our lives? And the more I try and refine this question, the less sense it makes.
Brussels sprouts.
yes,
just
maybe.
Sorry. Let me just pause you there, Thomas, because I want to listen to that screaming, mournful child. Unfortunately, has he gone quiet again?
No. Now he and Melanie are singing the immigrant song.
What's the immigrant song?
You know, come from a land of the ice and snow. You know that song.
No, I don't know what that song is.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
As you were. Can you restate your question to be less kind of flappy?
What's a statistic a statistic at play in our lives that we don't consider? An important one.
Important one.
Actually, while you think about that, I'll tell you one thing. So a couple of weeks ago, we discussed a little bit about these Google, these self-driving cars, right? Mm-hmm. And we're just going to ignore for a moment that Google have just required, what are they called, Boston Robotics or whatever they're called, who make like the big dog, and they also make like that terrifying humanoid sort of android machine. And it's like, do we really want a company that no longer believes in not being evil? Do we really want them to be the ones with the best robots in the world? I'm not sure we do. If anything, we can trust the Japanese perhaps more, because they will just use them to build cool things that we want. But Google, I'm not so sure about. But something we discussed a couple of weeks ago was these self-driving cars. Every year in the States, 30,000 people are killed in car crashes. There are something like 10 million car accidents. Obviously, that number, there's a big difference. So not all of them lead to a fatality. Why have we not already done it? Even if the cars suck a little bit and they just have to stop every time it rains and you have to walk the rest of the way to where you're going, why haven't we already done that? I mean, even if they crash, if there's road work... I mean, it seems like it'd be worth it. 30,000 people a year die in car accidents. That just seems nuts. How do we tolerate that? That's insane.
And it's, I mean, it happens, it's not just the US, it happens here as well.
Right.
But, I mean, it is partly that it's actually hard to, it's not just a matter of the cars not getting, you know, the cars sometimes crashing or whatever. It's hard to make a car that will actually get out of your driveway and into the right lane of the road. It's not so much a safety thing as an even getting you closer to your destination thing.
Yeah.
But it sounds like now they actually are coming close to be working, and it would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've got a couple of problems, but they're going to solve them. And it's going to be, the upside to having self-driving cars, number one, none of us needs to own a goddamn car anymore because cars are awful. They're stupid.
Okay, stop though. Why are we excited about self-driving cars when they're not self-flying cars?
That's actually an extremely good point, but that would lead us off towards the Amazon drone thing and the problems you had with those, the flying drones.
Stupid.
What's the problem? You've got a problem with the flying drones?
I've expressed the problems of flying drones. They're great in places where there aren't things in the way. That's basically it.
And most places you'd actually want to either deliver a parcel to or drive to, there are things in the way.
Yeah.
I don't trust my Amazon drone not to crash into the tree out the front of my house or the power lines that run. Actually, there's no power lines on my street. But
it seems like it's pretty easy to know where power lines are.
Is it?
Yes.
I don't know.
I expect there's a map which has them detailed pretty accurately.
Google probably knows.
I'm sure Google knows. They've scanned all of us to within probably a couple of millimetres. They know right where I am because, look, here's my bloody Android phone. Google knows everything. I'm sure they can design. They can help Amazon come up with a drone that can deliver a pound of butter to me. Sorry, not a pound. A barleycorn of butter. No, what's the unit? A hogshead of butter right out onto my deck. I want a lot of butter and I want it now. And it's only communists who stop me from having it, like you, Dylan. Are you a communist? Is that what you're saying?
If someone who doesn't want you to have drone-delivered butter is a communist.
A hogshead of butter.
A drone-delivered hogshead of butter.
How much is a hogshead? Isn't that like several gallons?
Quite a lot.
Hogs head. Imperial gallons?
138 litres.
That is not even, that's ridiculous. There's no way the volume of a pig's head is 238 litres.
So, like, that's like a quarter of a ton of butter or something, right? I want a giant barrel of butter. And Dylan, I bloody well want it right now. Why are you stopping me from having
it? I'm sorry, I don't know what I was thinking.
How would you... That's too much butter. I don't. Why would you even suggest that that was how much butter I should have, Dylan? What's wrong with you?
I don't know what's wrong with me.
Professor Thomas, statistically, what's wrong with Dylan?
Well, statistics isn't very good at individual problems. Yep. Something we were, Dylan and I were talking about while we were trying to track you down.
Yeah, this is the thing. So statistics, we have a tendency to apply statistics to ourselves, right? So you say that the theory, I don't know what it is. So say 10% of people are 10% of adult males are gay. I don't know if it is that number or not. But then you sort of stand yourself in a room of 9 other guys and you think, well, one of these guys is gay. But it doesn't work that way, does it?
No, though it does for large enough groups of people. I mean, if you had 1,000 people, there'd be a pretty good chance that 100 would be, well, 50, since it's probably more like 5%. But what's harder is making it go. I mean, so if one in five, you know, if one in 20 men is gay, then what does it even mean to say there's a 5% chance that you are? You know, because you basically are or you aren't.
Yeah, there's a 100% chance that I am or not.
Wait, did you just come out on the show, Dylan? Should we tell Melanie?
Leave that with me, will you?
Should we tell your parents?
Okay. Well, just let them listen to the show. They can make their own decisions.
I actually think that sexual preference is really strange. Like, okay, so, like, why do I like my lady friend? Is it because she's a girl? Because I feel like, you know, when I think about her hugely long list of wonderful characteristics, few of them are related to her gender.
Okay, so the sexuality one's maybe not a good example. So as a parent, though, there's, you know, you constantly, there's a fear of, you know, stranger danger, abduction, kids drowning in swimming pools, and there's lots of statistics about all of these things, and it's hard not to apply those statistics individually to your own children or to your own life, but it doesn't really work that way.
No, stranger danger is bullshit.
Well, yes, there's probably a Penn and Teller bullshit about that. But
I'm sorry, Dr. Thomas, I interrupted once again.
Yes. The point, it's easy. The other problem is that it's easy to get the wrong, either to worry too much or not enough about things that are very unlikely because, it's not just that either it will happen or won't happen, but also we don't have good intuition for how much we should worry about things that are unlikely. And so we tend to either worry too much about something that's really unlikely but really bad, or just decide it's impossible and ignore it.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to sort of say how much should you worry about something that's a 1 in 100,000 chance.
Right, like, so Tesla, there were a couple of accidents which involved, I think, almost always striking large metal objects on the road and damaging the battery packs and catching fire. And then the occupants of those vehicles being warned by onboard systems that said, you need to pull over now and now you need to get out of the car. And they did, and everyone was fine. And on the other hand, and so people were like, oh my God, there's electric cars. It turns out they're terrifying. They're going to murder you and your family. What are we going to do? This is probably going to be the end of democracy. But on the other hand, we've got petrol cars that are fueled by an explosive liquid, which is known to kill people quite regularly and is the foundation ingredient in Molotov cocktails. It's like, oh no, those are perfectly safe.
More importantly, it's the foundation ingredient in climate change.
Actually, and that maybe is even a bigger issue to consider because that's really all of us.
Yeah, and it's not. And the problem is that it's not scary. I mean, apart from a few people who it's actually quite difficult to be, I mean, you can easily think about it and think that it's really bad and something should be done, but it's hard to be scared of it the way you might be of your electric car catching fire or, you know, something happening to your children.
So there we go. We've nailed down at least one statistical fallacy. I was worried about Molotov cocktails, but actually climate change.
And my children.
I'm not really worried about your children that much.
Why not?
Look, honestly, I mean, I've got a big heart and I care about so many people, but I can't care about everyone, Dylan.
We were walking beside a river yesterday. I could have just turned my back for a moment and one of them could have just disappeared.
And we live in hope. We live in hope, Dylan. But it didn't happen, did it?
No. All right. Statistics. Do you know the Monty Hall problem, Morgan?
Yes.
Are you familiar with
it? Yes, this is the goats.
No.
Is this not the goats? This is the goats.
Oh, okay, so there is goats. Yes, okay. I just think of it as the doors, though.
Yes, but the doors have goats behind them.
The doors are in front of the goats.
Does it have to be goats? Couldn't it be something else? Okay, goats.
It could be something else, yes.
But
the Monty Hall problem is simple, and it's all right, you describe the basics of the Monty Hall problem. Go. Quick, shut up. Just describe it.
Okay, three doors. You stand in front of three closed doors. One of the doors has something good behind it, and the other two don't have something good.
The other two have goats.
The other two have goats, which is something good.
And choose a door, and then...
You choose a door, and then the host of the show, this TV show, opens another door.
No.
What, no?
The host of the show... actually, he might open a door. He excludes one of the doors, and then he opens
the door and shows you there's nothing good behind it.
Do you stick with the door you've already chosen, or do you change? And statistically, you're a fuckwit if you don't change. And initially, people are like, but wait a minute, this is 1 in 3. It was already 1 in 3. No, because now it's actually, you've got a 50% chance of being right if you change, and you've only got a 33% chance of being right if you stick. Now it becomes, should we let our special guest answer this? But I can tell you why. It's really simple.
But it's interesting.
Imagine if there were 1,000 doors and you choose one and he opens 998 doors and he says, are you going to stick with the door you chose or are you going to change? Obviously you change. Because the one that you chose, there's like a 0.1% chance of it being right. And the other door is like a 50% chance. Or maybe an even greater number.
Yeah, but it does depend on exactly what the host's behavior is. So, I mean, this calculation, with Monty Hall, we do know exactly what he did because it was a television series and it was on, you know, over and over and over and over again. Yeah. And he always picks one door, opens it, and it doesn't have anything good behind it.
Yeah.
And if that's the rule, then you should always switch because basically he's giving you information for free. But if, for example, he was trying to trick you, then he might, suppose that he didn't have to do that. Suppose that he only opened a door and showed you when you already had the right answer in order to try and trick you into switching.
Right.
Then you wouldn't want to switch. You need to know exactly what how he makes his decision in order to know how you should react to it. And that's why it's tricky, because what he's doing is actually being as helpful to you as possible.
Yeah.
And that's really unusual in a situation where you're in some sort of competitive game. Normally the people on the other side are either neutral or out to get you.
Do you think, as a population, we generally are statistically literate enough? Like, do we the example of news media failing to comprehend the statistics they report, or occasionally even deliberately misreporting them?
1 minute.
Should we be smarter about that as a people?
I think we should, and we're my department is trying to improve statistics teaching in high school to try and get more people to do sort of basic comparisons and basic understanding uncertainty in statistics.
Because I also think we should, you know, generally understand problem solving and logic better. And is that all tied in?
It's related. So the statistics is one of the tools that you can use to find out that your ideas are hopelessly wrong, which is the basic scientific problem solving approach. Is you have some brilliant, clever idea, and then you try and show it's horribly wrong, and it probably is, and then occasionally it isn't.
And we've approximately reached the end of the show, and I haven't had time to ask you an Urban Dictionary word of the week.
Well, we'll do that after the thing, because I mean,
this is the end, but not quite.
Yeah.
One. You're listening to the weekly show on
the completely meaningless end of the show.
It's meaningful-ish. It kind of signifies that we've basically reached the end.
Well,
basically.
So I just heard you mention that you're going to do an Urban Dictionary word of the week.
Yes, Thomas, are you familiar with Urban Dictionary?
I pushed
it. It is a website of which I am aware, yes.
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
It's not a word, it's actually a phrase.
Professor Thomas, what we do is that Dylan tells us a word or phrase, and we try to come up with what we think is the likely definition. And depending on what the word is, like if it's obvious that it's going to be like a hilarious answer, then I'll let you go. And if it's not so obvious, maybe I'll go and then you can come up with a better answer. All right? And that's it. And that's Urban Dictionary. Word of the week.
We have a slight tendency in the past to have gone quite blue, but we try to avoid that these days after an incident.
We got in a lot of trouble.
Anyway, the Urban Dictionary phrase of the week is statistically significant other.
I think I know the XKCD cartoon this comes from.
Oh, is there? Oh, man. If I'd known there was an XKCD, I never would have gone for it.
And it's in fact one of the ones that we've got up in our on the video in our department.
Oh, look at that! It just took. All right, so a few.
Unfortunately, it's hard to describe cartoons over the.
No, see, radio. Snoopy's lying on top of his doghouse, right, and he's on his back, and his ears are, and then Woodstock comes up. Is that? That's about right, isn't it?
Yes, only it's not Snoopy and Woodstock, but yes, that's right.
There are these two cows standing in a field.
Yeah, so basically, you know, I've just found it, yes. So
this is cheating!
Come along. I'm not your boyfriend. I didn't cheat when I came up with the answer, just the explanation. So I'm not your boyfriend. You totally are. Dating a number of people, but you spend twice as much time with me as with anyone else. I'm a clear outlier. Your math is irrefutable. Face it, I'm your statistically significant other.
All right, that's Thomas's answer, but I think he's way off base. He's just so wrong, he couldn't be any more wrong. Obviously, a statistically significant other, that's when people choose the wrong answer on a survey. It's when they say Jedi, when they actually that just contaminates the results. That is a statistically significant other.
Yeah.
You've been served.
The Census Bureau, I'm counting the Jedis this time.
I'm giving it to... That's not fair. I'm giving it to Thomas, although there is an alternative explanation. Actually, is my audio all right?
Wait. Let me...
We've got a winner.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations, Thomas. It happens very infrequently.
I'm gonna just read you the summary here. As a significant other whose status is not created by an agreed upon relationship status, but by how much time is spent with them, could also be considered a behavioral significant other. Right. The alternative definition here, though, is enough ex boyfriends / girlfriends to constitute a valid scientific study.
Yep.
Yeah, you better stay away from Pamela. She's got statistically significant others.
I actually quite like that. The first of your second answers there, the second definitions. Because, well, I mean, you know, probably many of us have had friends with benefits, you know, which is, you know, it's part of the transition from friend zone to something else. And the friends with benefits thing, that's meant to be a booty call thing, right? And then you just go your separate ways. You don't stay, you go home. But as that gradually increases, might become slightly more significant statistically.
Well, we'll know it's a real thing when it becomes a relationship status on Facebook.
Complicated.
It's statistically significant. All right, well, we'll probably wrap it up there because it's getting late and I think my children have finally gone to bed, so it's safe for me to leave the office.
Yeah. Maybe we should have started this a little bit later, like normal. I don't know.
It was doomed from the start. There was no way.
What was everyone drinking, or was am I the only one who has gone over the legal limit?
I was drinking a Coke Zero. It's long gone.
Yeah, with nothing in it.
Thomas, did you have a cocktail for the show? We didn't tell you to make a cocktail.
No, I just had a cup of tea.
Where are you from? That's like you're English or something.
Yeah, well, I'm Australian, but my parents are both English.
Right.
Well, I guess you can't. It's a cup of tea followed by a 4X.
Ugh.
I don't know. Surprisingly, drinks is not something I have a lot of Australian stereotypes about.
Yeah, well, I lived in Seattle for 15 years, so and they have good beer there, so it turned me into a beer snob.
Well, actually, you know, beer snobs can get by in New Zealand now. It's possible.
They can, yes. Yes, yeah. There's some very good beer in New Zealand.
You definitely have
expensive,
to...
Expensive,
oh, God, the price is so terrible. Like, you can pay $6 from a wholesaler for one can. That is just, it's mind-boggling. Like, $11, $12, $13 for a single bottle, you know, a larger size bottle. That is just, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
I mean, I think, if anything, these giant vat-brewed golden lagers with no flavour, those are the ones that should have additional excise put on them. I think there should be some kind of adjustment factor. If you, like, put a lot of hops in, then you get multiplied by point something or other, and your price gets reduced a little bit.
Imagine.
Just imagine if we were forced by economics to drink better beer. Just imagine. Oh, it would be wonderful. Of course, it wouldn't be any benefit for you, Dylan, would there, because you don't do it. But
I don't drink beer, no. I occasionally drink those very expensive ciders, though, which is, you know,
very expensive ciders. I've been really enjoying the, maybe a little bit too much tonight, I'm on my second bottle, these Old Moot Feijoa ciders.
Oh, yeah, they're quite good. I was quite into Recorderlig last summer. I'll see if I keep going through it this summer. I've tried the other one, which is Wild Side, which is a New Zealand sort of knockoff of a record leg, which is nowhere near as good.
But wait a minute. Are you sure that it's a good idea for you to be drinking cider from Sweden when you really should be drinking New Zealand-made stuff?
I drink New Zealand-made stuff as well, but the Wild Side one's not as good as the Swedish one, which is also made in New Zealand.
Well, I don't know why you're drinking Wild Side. New Zealand makes a bunch of different kinds of cider.
I drink those ones too.
Why... the import. Why not support New Zealand made? That's what I'm asking. You're a traitor.
Okay. I want the fruity, fruity, fruity ones.
Well, you want an Old Moot Feijoa. Oh, what kind of fruit do you want? Do you just want it to be sweet, or do you want, like, friggin' raspberries in there or whatever?
I want strawberries and wine. No, strawberries and lime. That's better.
Strawberries and wine in your cider.
Strawberries and wine. Yeah, it's a different drink.
Let's see.
It's the end.
Has my Secret Santa, has it been updated? Nope, not yet received. Hey, I've got an idea. How about I...
mine was received this morning.
Sorry, this show is cancelled. Beep.